Spirit Blade Underground, episode 478. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audio file encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for system file. Spirit Blade Underground, episode 478.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community... website and community you can check out at ChristianGeekCentral.com. I'm Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to hopefully equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out SpiritBlade.com. On the show today, my review of Blade Runner 2049, a look at the Christian Geek Radar, and then also I'm going to talk about my fundraising rewards and incentives that I'm offering for you guys if you help me out in my fundraising for Extra Life. And the next week, lest anyone be concerned on the Christian Geek Central team, I'll be talking about team member rewards and incentives for fundraising. So I'll cover that next week. This week, I'm being selfish. All right, let's get to it. Blade Runner 2049. Just a little bit of background. I've seen the original Blade Runner at least twice, maybe three times, at different times of my life, and I've never really enjoyed it. I much prefer movies that were inspired by it in terms of visually, but the pacing of that movie is just so slow for me. Even going in knowing, okay, this is not a sci-fi action movie or anything like that, even going in with that, it's like, this is slow. So I was really curious what they were going to do with a sequel, if they were going to hang on to those elements of the original, in addition to, you know, all the other things that Blade Runner is known for. So anyway, the synopsis on IMDb, provided by Warner Brothers, reads, 30 years after the events of the first film, a new Blade Runner, LAPD Officer K, played by Ryan Gosling, unearths a long-buried secret that has the potential to plunge what's left of society into chaos. K's discovery leads him on a quest to find Rick Deckard, played by Harrison Ford, a former LAPD Blade Runner who has been missing for 30 years. Alright, so it's dystopian sci-fi mystery is how I would describe it. So, which is very much, I think, like what the first one was. You know, it's not an action movie. Very little action, actually, in this. It's much like the first in terms of its pacing and its tone. It felt very slow to me, with most shots going about 3 seconds longer than I would like. If I were to re-edit this movie, almost every shot I would snip like 3 seconds off of. And there are also often lengthy silences, which would, you know, be fine in a lot of other movies, but there's also little visually happening in those instances as well to move the story forward or say something more about the characters. I mean, maybe there'll be little things about the world itself and that maybe if you really look deep, contribute to the themes that they're playing with, but, you know, to me, it just felt really, really slow. Way too slow for me. It has a running time of about 2 hours and 45 minutes, and I think it could have been 2 hours easy and would have been improved for my tastes. As far as the cast goes, the performances I felt like were all solid for, you know, what I like, and I felt, if anything, they elevated the script, bringing some layers in subtext, you know, that weren't necessarily on the written page. They probably were in the notes of the script, you know, for all I know, but anyway, you know, there was, you know, some good performances, but it still wasn't enough to get me invested, because the character motivations as it was written were just far far too often below the surface, and too below the surface for me to feel invested, really, in any of the characters. So that was a bit of a bummer for me. As far as the stunts and visuals go, I thought the visuals were great. It was similar industrial design to the first movie, but it takes us to new environments and a little more daylight in this movie. And so it kind of expands the world while still being true to, I think, a lot of the visual design of the first one. And, you know, you can also believe that it's been 30 years and that things have changed a little bit, you know. There's some clever hologram effects, especially with the main character, his female holographic girlfriend. And thematically, there's kind of some interesting things that they're maybe playing with there, which are not in my notes for theme, so I'll just mention them right now. Just the idea of not investing in real human relationships and instead being content to just surround ourselves with entertainment stimulation and letting those be in the place of relationships, you know, or only opening ourselves up to very limited forms of relationships, such as like online, you know, friendships and stuff like that. So there's potentially some commentary or some thought, you know, to be had about that theme. I played with that theme myself in the third part of the Spirit Blade audio drama trilogy, Spirit Blade: A World of Shadows. And I think that they didn't go into it, you know, maybe as deeply as I would like. Obviously, I liked playing with that theme more, so I went into it more deeply myself. But I still thought that they gave a good treatment of it in, at least for me, while I was looking at that relationship, I felt sad that Ryan Gosling, his most meaningful relationship for much of the movie, was with this digital human being. Although there was kind of a nod or a moment after that that he had with a human character that suggested, oh, now he's maybe moving on and opening up to more, you know, relationships with actual human beings, you know. So there was, you know, a little bit of an interesting arc there. And it was served, coming back to visual effects, by how they did the visual effects. There was some interesting, just kind of overlapping with the hologram and the environments that it was in, overlapping with another, you know, actor and stuff. They just kind of did some interesting things with that. Let's see here. Unfortunately, as far as visuals go, the camera also objectifies women various times throughout the movie, including briefly shown yet repeatedly utilized female nudity. So that was a bummer. That alone would make this a non-purchase for me if I didn't already find so much of the movie uninteresting as it is. As far as, I don't often comment on music and sound, but I will briefly here. This was interesting to me. I thought that in the original Blade Runner, there were times where I was like, I'm having trouble making out what this person is saying. Like, there's too much background noise going on that's getting in the way. And I feel like, starting with around Christopher Nolan, when his movies started getting big, we started seeing more movies being mixed in a way where, like, the intelligibility of the dialogue was less of a priority than some of the other things going on. Like when Bane is talking in the third Christopher Nolan Batman movie, you know, it's kind of hard to understand what he's saying, you know? And, and so this movie is like, I guess they felt like that was an essential part of the original Blade Runner, to have dialogue that was kind of hard to hear over the the ambient noise in the environment, because they did that again. There was like, there was a time where I was like, hey, can we turn down this machinery? Or hey, can we back off the ocean a little bit? I kind of want to hear what Harrison Ford is saying. And other times, even in quiet scenes, the dialogue would still be just kind of muttered and stuff. Or, you know, off from a distance, a character would be talking in kind of a light tone, and the echo ambiance of the room, you know, is just, it obscures the dialogue a little bit. So it was just, it's kind of some weird choices. And then every once in a while, you know, there's, as with the original Blade Runner, I remember it being very soft at times and then being very loud at other times. So there's this wide range in terms of the decibel level of what that movie was like. And likewise, in this movie, you'd have these muttered, like, conversations. And then in a scene transition, you get the synth brass going, and I'm like, holy crap, there's not even anything exciting happening. Is this supposed to build tension for me right now? Like, did something significant happen in the plot that I just missed? You know, it almost seemed to like not have a rhyme or reason as to why the synth brass would come in. It's just like, here's a new establishing shot for a different part of the city that we're going to take the story to now. And while we establish the shot, we're going to... So... yeah, I get its relationship to conjuring what the original movie was like, but I don't see how in and of itself right now it was helping the story. So Anyway, as far as like relevance, you know, I always try to ask myself when I'm engaging in entertainment, is there anything of worthwhile moral, philosophical, spiritual significance going on here that might kind of bring about some worthwhile thought in me or some conversation as I'm talking to other people about this thing? You know, AI was definitely a significant theme. I often have problems with stories about artificial intelligence because they usually try to create a question in the mind of the audience about whether or not an AI character is just as much a person as a human being, you know, from Short Circuit to Terminator to what was that one? I can't remember the guy who made. I don't remember. If these weren't uncut reviews, I'd be able to look it up and I'd have that name for you right now. But there was like a, you know, sometimes they'll make them cute and adorable AIs that we're supposed to fall in love with, and sometimes they'll, you know, anyway, they often try to put that question in your mind: is this just as much a person as a human being is a person? And yet they very often, most times, pose this question in an assumed naturalistic framework in which humans are only physical in their makeup. But if humans are only physical beings, well, then of course we can allow even the cell phones of tomorrow to feel entitled to human rights if they can convincingly display simulated emotional expressions. I mean, who are we to judge, right? You know, but I believe persons, by definition, have a non-physical component. That's a vital part of what makes persons persons. So if a story doesn't allow for a way in which an AI can gain a non-physical soul of some kind, that AI is just going to be a toaster to me, no matter how much the filmmakers want me to fall in love with it. At least in the case of Johnny Five in, you know, the old Short Circuit movie, it was a lightning bolt. You know, and you could argue that somehow God chose to bring that about or something. It was clearly this like crazy, arguably supernatural event that happened with this lightning striking, you know. Other stuff, like in the case of Data in Star Trek, you know, I don't remember anything Star Trek fans can correct me if I'm wrong on this. I don't remember there being any suggestion that there was a spiritual element involved in his creation or a supernatural element. It seemed to be purely a bunch of ones and zeros and hardware at work in creating Data. And yet we are very frequently in that show asked to invest in him as a character, invest in him as a person, you know. That's how he's written. That's how he's performed by Brent Spiner. I think it's Spiner. Is that how you say his name? Anyway. But Blade Runner 2049 is a bit different. I don't remember what the lore of the original movie is, so I'm not going to factor that in. I'm just going to ignore that for the sake of this just kind of reflection. But the on-screen text at the start of this movie says that replicants, which are artificially made kind of these humanoid things, are defined as replicants are bioengineered humans, which I took to mean that, okay, whatever the method and whatever the modifications to their capacity for, whatever the method for their creation and whatever the modifications to their capacity for emotion or for making decisions or whatever, these are humans. They're bioengineered, adjective, noun, humans. So they're arguably damaged humans in the same way that some medical conditions can affect emotions. They can deaden emotions or they can affect decision-making in some way, you know, but we would still call people with those conditions human. Of course we would. But they're still, you know, humans rather than, you know, the replicants then are still actually humans rather than highly advanced machines made of water and protein that are just really good at fooling people into thinking that they're displaying emotions and stuff like that. So that was based on the text at the beginning, which when they present text at the beginning of a movie like that, unless there's a little quote at the bottom, so, you know, from the book of blah, 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 or if you hear a character narrating that or whatever, if it's not one of those things, you know, we should take that as this is objective reality for the setting of this movie. And the objective reality set up in this movie is that replicants are humans. They're a specific type of human, but they are humans, even though in the world they are being treated as non-humans treated as slaves as a result of that. That doing that took away the question I think that I'm meant to ask. I could be wrong. I don't know what the filmmaker's intent is here, but I think I'm still meant to ask, through at least part of this movie, whether or not replicants deserve human rights and deserve my sympathy as a viewer. I think pretty early on they're trying to make us feel sympathetic, you know, toward the replicants. But I mean, sometimes filmmakers can do that, but still want you to wonder, are they really, you know, persons or not, you know? So, you know, but I mean, you know, as far as that opening text is concerned, I'm like, well, of course they deserve human rights. Of course they deserve my sympathy as a viewer, that you just told me they were human, you know? So, but I will say that while that hurt my engagement a little bit, as a viewer, it took away that kind of wondering of, are they human or are they not? You know, I did appreciate that the script did not decisively claim, or decisively imply based on just the logic of the world that true persons can be created through purely physical means, which is most often the case in AI movies where we are asked to identify with or have sympathy for the AI character. I think that Battlestar Galactica, of course, the recent series, not the one from the 70s or whatever the crap, but the recent Battlestar Galactica has the best handling of this idea that I've seen for my taste in terms of like leaving the question up in the air, because the Cylons were cold and sometimes unfeeling enemies for much of the series, but a few of them changed over time, or we learned that they were different from others. And it was also suggested at one point in the series that God provided the Cylons souls at the moment that they were first created, as though he quietly and uninvitedly was involving himself in the creation of the Cylon race, despite humans doing the physical manufacturing and being unaware of God's involvement, you know. So they allowed at least for that possibility that, you know, by having one of the Cylons say, no, this is what happened. We do have souls. God inserted them during the creation process, you know. So that allows me as a viewer who does not hold to a naturalistic worldview to say to myself, oh, huh, well, maybe they are persons and not just like brilliantly deceptive simulations of persons. So anyway, I have no idea what your tastes are in movies, but if I were a time traveler, I would go back in time and say, Pater, guess what? No shocker here. Skip this one. It's just as boring to you as the original. Instead, go watch some movies that were inspired by the original Blade Runner. You'd tend to enjoy those a lot more than the actual source material itself. It's rated R for violence, some sexuality, nudity, and language.
Scanning for Christian geeks. Subject located. Verifying status. Christian geek status verified. Begin data transmission.
Taking a look at the Christian Geek Radar regarding the months of, what are we in now, October? So this would be August and September. Sorry, I missed last month. Had a few other things going on that were crunching my time a little bit. It's also been a little bit on the quiet side in terms of, like, news from the world of Christian geekery. But as always, even when there's not news, I do like to bring you guys just some highlights of things that have been going around for a while in the world of Christian geekery. So I'm sorry I wasn't here to do that for you last month, but we should be back on track now. One bit of news was that Revelation Games, who basically shut down their Kickstarter for, or it didn't go through or didn't succeed or whatever you want to call that, for Rise of the King, which was a really cool looking game, but they realized was just going to be too ambitious for kind of what the resources and ability that they had at their disposal. So after that, didn't go through. They kind of went dark for a while, and then recently they sent out this announcement saying, we've been working hard the last several months since the Kickstarter cancellation, and we've taken a lot of feedback and been focusing on a new project we wanted to share with you all. It's still in the survival genre, so we think you might enjoy it. While we've put Rise of the King on the shelf, we're taking some of the work we've done on it and redirecting it into a new experience. We do hope Rise of the King will live yet again one day, but this game will help us get back there. Our new project is Kindred Unlikely Companions, and they've got like a proper page that kind of gives more images and details about it. They say Kindred Unlikely Companions is an action-adventure game that explores the relationship between a lone hunter and his wolf companion as they set out to unite a divided kingdom. Build campsites, craft items, engage in tense combat, and explore an immersive quest line as you progress the story. Bond with your wolf and unlock special abilities to help you survive and fight stronger. Today also begins a shift in our development structure. We're officially on Patreon, they say. We've taken a lot of feedback from everyone and are moving to a more community-based platform where we can get everyone plugged into the game early for your fun and feedback. And they add, when you support us on Patreon, you'll get access to our current tech demo to play with central mechanics to the game and give us feedback. We'll continue to expand the tech demo content over the coming months and eventually feature a full gameplay demo experience leading to a pre-alpha build of the game. So if you kindly support us, you'll get early access to the game as it evolves. Check out the teaser below. So anyway, I will actually direct you to their Patreon page, which is patreon.com/revelationgames, where you can see the demo, like a video of what the game looks like. If you're listening to the podcast version of this on the Spirit Laid Underground podcast, then I'll just say that it definitely looks more polygonal, very low texture. It's in that kind of like retro 3D style, you know, where 3D never really looked like this in the early days of, say, the PlayStation 1, but it still has a low polygon count and not very detailed textures at all. Similar in some ways to, say, like a video game like That Dragon Cancer, where it's more about just kind of expressing the ideas of these shapes and the basic look of them. And there's still some cool stuff going on with shading and stuff, but the textures themselves are not detailed at all. Like I said, it's a low polygon count. So it definitely has a specific aesthetic, but I'm guessing it's also going to really allow them to, you know, tackle this a lot easier than the really richly detailed and visually, I could almost say stunning, at least it looked like it was heading in that direction, the kind of stuff they were doing with Rise of the King, which looked really super ambitious. So hopefully this will allow them to kind of take a step back and bite off, a smaller amount that they can actually chew successfully. Boy, that's really kind of a weird metaphor when you keep stretching that. And what do you say next? Digest and then poop out without any problems. No. But anyway, yeah. So this is always cool to me. I love seeing Christian creators making, you know, geek content, geek entertainment with excellence. And then, if appropriate, realizing, okay, we need to take a step back so that we can actually achieve what we're setting our minds to. You know, I think a move like this is a great move on the part of Revelation Games. Rather than pushing forward with Rise of the King and ending up putting something out that would, you know, end up being, without the right resources and time given to it, the video game equivalent of what a lot of Christian movies have been for a long time. So I definitely tip my hat to them for this shift in direction, and hopefully, what's this game called again? Oh crap, we'll pull up the announcement. Kindred Unlikely Companions. Hopefully that'll be a great success for them. Again, go to patreon.com/revelationgames for more information about that. All right, now moving on to like some podcasts, another kind of like, free content that you can check out online. The first is a podcast it's a little bit of a different animal for me to try to describe to you. If you go to morethanonelesson.com, that's the name of this site, and I think it's also the name of the podcast, but they also, if you go over to podcast, there's a drop-down menu that opens up, and then there are these smaller categories that you can choose. So like the regular podcast is going to cover a bunch of things. Their general description for the website More Than One Lesson is movie talk for the discerning Christian. But that could be, you know, all kinds of movies, and specifically I like to focus on what's going to appeal to geeks in particular. So but they've got like a filter or a version of this podcast that's called The Fear of God. That you can check out. And this covers horror movies, both new and classic, you know. So their recent episode, which went up on September 27th, is titled The Fear of God, Quarterly King, regarding the movie It. And then before that, on September 19th, The Fear of God, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Before that, September 12th. So you see they're coming out with these pretty frequently. The Fear of God, The Wicker Man from 1973. Before that, Take Shelter. Then The Night of the Hunter, a much older movie. And then The Descent. And going back, The Creature from the Black Lagoon, Night of the Living Dead, and more recent, the more recent movie, Green Room. You know, so it's a conversational podcast. And is covering like all kinds of horror movies from past and present. So anyway, you can find that if you go to morethanonelesson.com and then go to the drop down under podcast and select The Fear of God. Next up, Another podcast, Game Store Profits. They're on episode 162 now, and likewise published on a pretty regular basis. Their most recent episode is September 25th, titled Chasing the Cardboard Dragon. This is a conversational podcast, and it's focused on tabletop gaming. The description for the most recent episode reads, a conversation about what I should obtain for my next game purchase led us to a discussion about the constant chase for getting all the newest and shiniest games on the market. How do we prioritize when to buy games, and what games do we buy? While the new games coming out are filled with great things, how many games sit idle on our shelves? How do we evaluate why our games are important to us and whether or not we actually need to get the game we want so badly now? And maybe a brief moment about how Jerry Hawthorne and Plaid Hat Games made me cry. So anyway, so these guys seem to be endeavoring to really talk about their, you know, their geek interests in a very uncompartmentalized way, you know. Whereas some sites you're going to run into, you know, they'll be Christians, they identify themselves as Christians, but largely they're still just kind of talking about, you know, what's going on in the game industry and stuff. And these guys really seem to be endeavoring to, in a very uncompartmentalized way, talk about the things they love, but then also talking about, okay, how do I as a believer navigate this side of my life, you know, this, not just like what games and entertainment do I choose to take in, but how do I think about these things? How do I prioritize them? Am I prioritizing them too much? You know, so they talk about Gen Con, the Gen Con experience. They talk about a tendency for pride that can happen among gamers. So anyway, and sometimes they just get really honest here with this episode 155, just kind of expressing that they're tired of kind of explaining themselves. And there's just some of the nature of their ministry that they're doing that can be just kind of exhausting. So anyway, I really like what these guys seem to be endeavoring to be about. So you can find more from them at GameStoreProfits.com if you are so inclined to tabletopity stuff. If you're more of a button masher, then Gaming and God might be of interest to you. You can find it at gamingandgod.com. This is also going to be more for people that are interested in reading blogs as opposed to like watching YouTube videos or listening to a podcast. And so this is a guy that writes, you know, I'll just read you some of the article titles here. My thoughts on Christian gamers, games Christians should play. Let's see here, gamer motivations, spirituality in Japanese video games. So this is a guy that is both talking about video games and a little bit of anime now and then. Like he's got an article titled Chain Chronicle, When Hope Isn't Enough. And he's also been known to write for, let's see here, Geeks Under Grace, Geekdom House, and Beneath the Tangles. So if you're interested in like Japanese imported video games or localized, you know, for English-speaking audiences, video games and Japanese anime and stuff like that, and you find yourself drawn to reading content as opposed to listening to it or watching it, then you might want to give Gaming and God a try, again, at gamingandgod.com. And then lastly, Geek Devotions describe themselves as Geek Devotions, they say, is a new web series created by a couple of devoted geeks who are devoted to telling people that they are loved. We will be making videos designed to encourage and uplift people, all the while embracing all things geeky, such as comics, video games, books, and movies. And the tagline underneath their banner says, show from a couple of devoted geeks devoted to letting you know that you are loved. And there's both a male and a female host. I'm not sure if they're just friends or if they're married. I'm not quite clear on that, but anyway, I really enjoy what they're doing. It's you know, it's a lot like what it sounds like. It's devotions that are put out on a weekly basis. So it's not like an in-depth Bible study, you know, and the videos aren't really long. They're, you know, these nice bite-sized kind of moments where you can interface with their reflections on Scripture and the reflections of those that they'll have on as guests. And they've had a number of guests from different places in the world of Christian geekery. They actually had me on to share some thoughts a while back, and anyway, so I really like what these guys are doing, and they are the production quality I think is really excellent as well. So anyway, if you're looking for just kind of something that's uplifting, or that it's maybe a little challenging or encouraging, once a week they put up new episodes every Friday. That's Geek Devotions, which you can find on YouTube, two words, Geek Devotions. If you're looking for more geeky stuff going on online, then go over to christiangeekcentral.com. Portal.com and just click on the gateway drop down underneath Portal, and that'll take you to in the navigation tab. You go to Portal, there's a drop down, then click on gateway, and that'll take you to this portal where you can go where you want based on your interest. Books and magazines, comics and animation, podcasts and blogs, tabletop gaming, video games. I try to keep this updated as much as I can so that as I'm learning more about different things in the world of Christian geekery that are happening online, I can add those to the list and share those with you. So anyway, anytime you want, you can go over to ChristianGeekCentral.com to our portal, and hopefully that'll be a good resource for you.
Data collection complete. Activating MusicNet 1.0.
For my fourth consecutive year, I'm participating in Extra Life. It's a charity event that raises funds to provide medical care for children that are in urgent need. I'm also leading the Christian Geek Central Extra Life team, which you're still invited to join by following the link in the description below. There's also a link down there to my fundraising page, which details rewards that you can get for donating. You can shut me up and just skip there right now, or stick around and I'll give you some more details. Once again this year, I'm going to be drawing attention to our team's fundraising by performing a 24-hour video gaming marathon that I'm going to be streaming live on youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral and also at ChristianGeekCentral.com. That's going to start at 6 a.m. Pacific on Saturday, November 4th. You're invited to donate to any member of our team by following the link to our team page in the description below. Our combined team goal this year is to raise $750 for this event. That's $250 more than last year's goal, but I think we can totally do that and even blow it out of the water with your help. You'll also find some fun incentives and rewards for donating toward our team members' efforts. Speaking for myself, I've cooked up some new rewards and brought back some standards from previous years. These rewards for my personal fundraising are now tier-based. And that means, for example, that donating $20 will get you the reward for the $20 level, the $10 level, and the $5 level. Here's the breakdown of what you can get for donating toward my particular fundraising efforts. At $5, you can choose a topic to add to my plus two page of many topics. Topics will be randomly selected from this document for me to share my overly strong opinions on during my live stream. At $10, you also get a download code for the Spirit Blade Legacy Edition audio drama. $20 gets you all that, plus you can choose a game for me to play during my November 4th live stream. You can pick a favorite or torture me with something terrible. $30 gets you all that, plus you can choose a song for me to sing during my November 4th live stream. Again, you can pick an old favorite of yours or just make me humiliate myself with something awful. And at $50, you get all of those rewards, plus you receive a download code for every MP3 product available at spiritblade.com. That's audio dramas and music. It's over a $90 value. Now, there are some stipulations and time limits on those rewards, so quickly follow the link below to my fundraising page for all the details. On top of individual rewards for donations, I'm also creating some milestones that will result in one or maybe multiple, maybe even all audio dramas and MP3 products from SpiritBlade.com being available for free on a free download day that I'm planning. If I at least reach my $200 fundraising goal in donations, I will have a free download day on November 8th, 2017 at SpiritBlade.com. Every $50 I reach in my total beyond my $200 goal, I will add another audio drama that will be made available for free on that free download day. And if I reach $500 in my personal fundraising total, then the legacy and special edition versions of the entire Spirit Blade audio drama trilogy, along with all of the song bundles, will be available for everyone completely for free on that free download day. I hope you'll be a part of helping me and the Christian Geek Central team do some good for some kids who really need it. Then please come to youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral and ChristianGeekCentral.com to cheer me on for my 24-hour marathon starting again at 6 a.m. Pacific on Saturday, November 4th. Hope to see you then. And I want to add to that, that's the audio from the video I put up this week, giving information about my rewards and Extra Life fundraising and stuff. Really, the easiest way to get information, to join the team, to donate, any of that, is to click on the link that I put up on the right side of the screen as soon as you arrive at ChristianGeekCentral.com. So really, just go to ChristianGeekCentral.com, and there's a really obvious link there that'll take you where you need to go to help out with our fundraising. Meanwhile, this week at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral, put up a new video every day this week. On Monday, I put up our new identity and purpose, which is the video version of last week's look at Ephesians. Then my Extra Life Rewards video, if you want some visuals
along with what you've already heard. Then part 9 of my Sword and Sorcery Immortal Souls solo playthrough of that board game. And my that's the final part of that series, and I'm also offering really just kind of my final thoughts as they stand now on that board game. Then on Thursday, I uploaded Stressing Over Action Games, which is part 1 of the highlights series from the conflicted live stream that I did back in, I want to say, February, where I played a bunch of games that stressed me out or that were really difficult or whatever. This has been among the more fun live streams to edit for me. I've really been enjoying just clipping down highlights of me freaking out and getting angry and laughing at myself and stuff like that. So hopefully you guys will enjoy that series. And again, part 1, Stressing Over Action Games, is up now. And then also, by the time you hear this, you should be able to get my uncut video version review of Blade Runner 2049. And while you're there, if you want to like, share, and subscribe, that does help to grow that channel and our community as well. Let's see here. I also just sent out the audio journal entries for the month of September to Spirit Blade Insiders, and September was a month of decisions. Just one major decision regarding the future of audio production at Spirit Blade Productions. And so I share where I've arrived at in this month's collection of audio journal entries. So if you want to hear the skinny on all that, behind-the-scenes stuff, then I'd invite you to consider becoming an insider. Insiders this month also get the Tully files, which we're getting close to the end of the Tully files. Michael Tully in these audio files wraps up his recording for Ran in Spirit Blade World of Shadows, and we prepare to record his material for the now abandoned Spirit Blade card game, which the concept there involved playing the game with an interactive recording that created atmosphere and also acted as a timer for gameplay. So if you want to know, get a sense of what might have been, then that's coming up in the Tully files. Actually, we're just kind of in the Tully files this month, we're just talking about, we're wrapping up, reflecting on the trilogy a little bit and reflecting on, all that we got done in a very short period of time. He spent just 2 days with me to get all of his recording done, songs and dialogue and everything for Spirit Blade World of Shadows. And so we kind of reflect on that roller coaster ride and kind of get our ducks in a row to get ready to record for the card game stuff. And then the actual recording of that stuff will be in next month's collection of Tully files. And then also this month, I've scheduled a live chat with Spirit Blade Insiders. We're doing a live video Google Hangout on October 13th. So it is not too late, if you'd like to be a part of that Hangout, to become a Spirit Blade Insider and get an invite to that. So anyway, if you want more information about becoming a Spirit Blade Insider, which is just I've just so appreciated the insiders and what their support has allowed me to do financially to just keep this thing afloat and to get some needed equipment. And now I'm in kind of a mode where I need to be saving up, because it's probably just going to be in a year or so. I mean, who knows, any time now, that some of this equipment that I've had for a long time is just going to fail on me or something. So right now I need to build up that security net a little bit. But anyway, more information about becoming a Spirit Blade Insider can be found on our About page over at spiritblade.com. All right, I think that's all about that. I want to remind you guys to check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, the Untold podcast, POSTOS, Helix Reviews, and the Retro Rewind podcast. For more information about the CGC Network, visit christiangeekcentral.com. Feedback. Give me feedback. I think I said feedback for the second one. Feedback is what I want. Give me your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, or anything else we're doing. What should we keep? What should we change? What's on your mind you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? I got one of those. We want to make this show and all of Christian Geek Central as fun and useful as we can, but we have to hear from you to do that. You can send me an email or audio file recorded on your phone to paeter@spiritblade.com. All right, well, let me just briefly pray in line with kind of one prayer request that I saw on the forums this week. God, we pray that you would just give us calmed and peaceful minds, in spite of how our minds can just be so active. They can worry, they can spin with all kinds of chaotic thoughts. We pray in those moments that you would just remind us of your personal, individual love for us, that you would reassure us with that, and you would just give us clarity in the moment to come out of kind of those spinning, worrying, and distracting thoughts, and just give us focus on what you have for us in that moment to engage in. In Jesus' name, amen. All right. I think that's it for this week. If I've done my math right, this episode is a little bit on the shorter side. But anyway, we will be back into In Search of Truth next week. You might be noticing I didn't talk about Ghosted or Inhumans this week. And that was originally my plan, was to talk about those along with Blade Runner, which is one of the reasons I wasn't going to do it. I didn't do In Search of Truth, you know. But I ended up, since Christian Geek Radar was going to be on there, I was like, okay, that's enough still for a show. And I honestly, guys, I watched Ghosted. And I was like, ugh, I don't have anything to say about this. I mean, nothing good, certainly. It's not my type of humor, but if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, then you might know that, you know, you can't trust my sense of humor to tell you when something's going to be funny. I don't laugh at the things that other people laugh at. I think, you know, I must be just cold and cynical and without any joy in my heart. So anyway, Ghosted, I watched this premiere. It wasn't for me. Maybe it'll be for you. Who the crap knows? And then I watched the first 20 minutes of Inhumans, and I was like, I don't need to spend time just talking about why I'm not enjoying this, you know? I just don't. I don't want to drag anybody down who's enjoying Marvel stuff. You have every right, and I encourage you to enjoy Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or Inhumans or anything else that that Marvel's doing. So I did not want to just be a part of the any voices that were going to be contributing to dragging down the enjoyment of others. Unfortunately, I had to talk about something, and so I did not, you know, abstain from my Blade Runner review, despite being disappointed in that. But anyway, so that's why all of that. Stay tuned for DS9 Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 400 if you want to start from the beginning. Next week, if God allows it, I'll be reviewing Professor Marston and the Wonder Women, which is about the guy who was one of the inventors of the lie detector, and created the character Wonder Woman, which I'm wondering if they timed it to come out at the same time as this movie. I mean, they must have kind of known. It's funny how they can kind of time things like that. They sense, oh, this movie's in pre-production, you know. But I mean, did they think Wonder Woman was going to be as well-received as it was, and they were banking on that? Or, I mean, what if Wonder Woman would have been a flop, and, like, no one would have seen it at all? I mean, they... if they were banking on that. It's just, I don't know, the timing is interesting. I don't get that kind of stuff in show business. But I mean, really, if I would have been just as interested in watching this movie 5 years ago, because if you're not familiar at all with kind of the unusual circumstances surrounding just Professor Marston, William Moulton Marston, I think is his full name, and just how he treated the women in his life in light of his creation of Wonder Woman, and the unusual relationships he had going on in his life. There's some interesting things going on, and I don't know how accurate this is going to be, because when I've watched behind-the-scenes stuff about this person, they are like documentaries about comic books, and they'll stop and talk about William Moulton Marston. There doesn't seem to be a lot of details about what was going on behind the scenes, and I think this movie is going to take liberties in filling in a lot of those behind-the-scenes details. So I don't think we can treat it as like this is the real story, but it's certainly, just from the trailer I've seen alone, very much based in what we do know about the unusual life and relationships of the creator of Wonder Woman. So anyway, interesting timing, and you know, it's not a, you know, geek fantasy, anything like that, but certainly I think it's relevant to geeks, the movie about the creator of Wonder Woman. So anyway, I'm very interested in seeing what that's all about. Till then, please consider supporting the work of Christian Geek Central and Spirit Blade Productions by purchasing an audio drama, leaving a donation, or becoming a Spirit Blade insider. You can get more information from our about page at spiritblade.com. Thank you guys so much for making time for this show. I hope you have a great week, and that you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Frampton with support from the Christian Geek Central community at christiangeekcentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit spiritblade.com. Thank you for listening.
Coming through the wormhole.
The Dominion has endured for 2,000 years and will continue to endure long after the Federation has crumbled into dust.
5 years ago, no one had ever heard of Bajor or Deep Space Nine. And now, all our hopes rest here.
And we just finished watching The Sword of Kalos, which means we're roughly halfway through the entire series by now. And
I like this one. It's a nice kind of genre mashup because it's almost like a fantasy story in Star Trek.
Yeah, very mild fantasy with a lot of Star Trek behind it, but yes. This is a return of Kor, who you remember all the way back in Blood Oath, and he was also in the original series. He was the very first Klingon commander we ever saw. And he meets Worf, and he's a legendary Klingon. He's the friend of Dax, the only one who survived Blood Oath with Dax. And he and Worf and Dax team up because Kor has found out that the long-lost relic, the Sword of Kalos, from which the episode gets its name, quite obviously, has been found. And so they follow the clues. And the quote-unquote quest part is really, really simple. I mean, they get the shuttle.
Yeah, they find it within, like, the first 15, 20 minutes.
Because this episode is not about finding the Sword of Kalos. It's about what the Sword of Kalos does. Because it's kind of like Lord of the Rings. That's another fantasy element besides the fact that they're after a sword. Is that this is like a legendary icon of their own history. And if you remember when I talked about the Klingons on Trek Talk a long time ago, this is the episode I was referencing where they talk about the Herc. And they were the first aliens that the Klingons ever met, and they conquered them. Like I say, the Klingons are like after Independence Day, or one of those alien invasion movies where they finally get rid of the aliens, but their world is left in shambles. And this was like that, is the Herc had taken away all of their treasured cultural relics and icons, including the Sword of Kalos, which is, I say, at least as significant as the Ark of the Covenant would be to Jews or Christians.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like because Kalos is like their equivalent of Jesus, their Messiah, their Savior, the pattern for their entire culture, and this was his legendary weapon. I mean, and so they find it, and Worf encounters an enemy from a past episode of Next Generation, and so basically we're running from the enemy. And Worf and Kor, this thing starts kind of like the One Ring in Lord of the Rings, starts working on them.
Except it's never shown that the Sword of Kalos possesses any mystical power.
Yeah, it's what it is in their culture.
Yeah, it's left very ambiguous whether there's something actually being done to them or whether it's just...
I think it's pretty clear there's nothing being done to them. It's just how important this is. It would be like, imagine if... I'm trying to think of anything that we have in our own culture that's anywhere near that. Part of it is that everyone's convinced, and because they're convinced, I'm pretty sure it's probably true, that whoever would hold this thing would basically get to rule the Klingon Empire.
Yeah.
And it would be like, okay, like the stupid Minion movie, where they get the crown jewels and suddenly they're the king of all Britain. All right? Imagine if you could have just one small handheld item that would give you that kind of control of all of the United Kingdom. Now imagine two people who both think they are the best choice to rule that kingdom, and they're trying to carry it out together. And you get an idea of what this is.
And that's the thing, is it's not like either of them is just going complete Gollum and, you know, hunched over and eating raw fish and threatening to bite off fingers.
But they are willing to hurt the other.
It's exacerbating their own natural impulses. Yeah. You know,
and they're both seeing the flaws in the other person. Exactly. And what I like is, they both have points at times. They both point out things that, yeah, you know what? Worf is right here. And you know what? Kor is right here. And I like... Also, Dax is with them. And I've noticed this about Dax. When the episode is all about Dax and she's the focus, it usually tends to be pretty lame because it's all about self-indulgence and how awesome Dax is. But when she is like a supporting character, like here, where she plays the balance between the two, she's really good. She holds her own against these very larger-than-life personalities of Worf and Kor.
And yeah, Dax seems to do really well when she's got second billing.
Yeah, she's a good support person. Because she's also really good when she's Sisko's sounding board. She's good.
Well,
at that
and because
too.
Dax doesn't have a personal dog in this fight,
yeah,
she's able to help moderate the two of them and keep them working together longer than they would have.
And she has close personal ties to both of them in different ways. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Dax is the natural going to go in between. Yeah, it's a pretty good episode. It is all about character building. It is important if you want to watch another episode all the way later in season 7. because that'll be the next time we see Kor. And so you'll need this at least to know that Worf and Kor have met. So you don't need to, they don't refer to these events ever again. So in that sense, it's a standalone. But we also get to know a lot more about Kor, and even more importantly, about Worf. So it's a good episode and a valuable one, but not an essential one for any kind of plot.
Well, yeah, it's a fun character piece. It's a fun quest story.
Yeah.
It's interesting because of what we learn about Kor, what we learn about Worf.
I do wish it had a little more of a budget, because all their questing is through all the standard caves that Star Trek always uses, and it has a very samey feel as they're going through caves.
Now, I'll say this. Worf, in this story, talks about a vision he had as a child. A vision of Kalis, who told him that he would accomplish something that no other Klingon would accomplish. And I'm not sure if this is this. He's referring to the same vision that Worf refers to in
Rightful Heir
in the Next Generation. But it's very interesting because Worf is like the he's a born again Klingon, basically.
Yeah.
He didn't grow up with these things, but because he has to be more Klingon than Klingon, essentially.
Yeah, he's kind of like Spock in
because,
that sense.
Because he wasn't steeped in the culture as a child, he's come to cling to it doubly hard as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it interesting that, you know, even when Worf has gone, you know, even when he's in as close to Gollum mode as he gets here, that he's still saying, you know, this will be for the good and the glory of the Empire. You know, it's not just about I, Worf, will sit the throne. Yes. It will be, we Klingons will be great again, you know?
And, yeah.
Yeah, and that speaks a lot to his character and to what's important to him.
Even his corruption is about serving the greater good.
Yeah.
And you may now quote Hot Fuzz there. But yeah, it's a pretty good episode. You don't need to watch it, but I'd recommend you do. It's a good character piece. And of course, Kor is always great, John Colicos. You'll know him if you're a fan of the original Battlestar Galactica. He was the original Baltar. So, alright, well, we'll see you next time for some really cheesy James Bond action. We'll see you then.